This is F1 Debrief. I like it when F1 does that to me. Coming up this week, we ponder the possibility of a new president, run through the race, and catch up with your feedback. I don't think I want to talk to you right now. I think I want to get on my plane and go home, because if I talk to you, you're just going to go blah, 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 blah. What's the point?
Yeah. Are you in a bad mood too, then? Are you unhappy with how your race went?
No, not really. I just like it. I like telling you, you'll just go blah, blah, blah.
I love it. I love drivers who speak their mind.
Absolutely. I think we'll probably talk more about that later.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Spanish fans who've had nothing to cheer about all year. Alonso will be bringing his car to his hometown, Oviedo, in September. He'll drive around a street circuit in the city, and the Renault F1 Roadshow is expecting fans of about 100,000 in number.
Can we go?
Yeah.
I want to go to this.
I think that'll be good.
I think that will be awesome. I bet the atmosphere there will be unreal.
It's been a bad week for Force India as they almost had their motorhome impounded. Some legal bods turned up to the paddock at the Nürburgring ready to seize the property, but the team managed to talk them around and later said this dispute with the contractor has been ongoing since last season and pertains to the quality of construction of the motorhome and its functionality. I don't understand what's going on.
Well, the team say it wasn't or isn't what they asked for, and therefore they've not paid for it. It's not the manufacturing.
But they're still using it.
Oh, yes. They've been using it for all of last year and the best part of this year as well. Every race in Europe for the past, 18 months, they've been using the motorhome that they haven't paid for.
But if they're using it, surely they have to pay for it.
That's exactly what the manufacturer's argument is. They say they haven't been paid for it and they want it back. Force India say they're looking into the dispute and it will be settled shortly.
It's a little bit embarrassing, though.
It's aggravation they don't need because they could have had their cars impounded.
It's been a good week for race fans as Fuji is no longer going to host a Grand Prix. The track is owned by Toyota, who've abandoned their plans to run the 2010 race because of the tough economic times.
Yeah, rubbish, wasn't it?
It's always rubbish.
Grand Prix at the base of a mountain, what a silly idea. Mm. Glad it's gone. Bring back Suzuka.
It's been a bad week for the Nürburgring roller coaster. It cost the taxpayers thousands and thousands of pounds to build. It didn't pass the safety certificate. And when it did start running, David Croft was saying it was driving him absolutely nuts. He kept thinking it was a car coming up the straight, but oh no, it was just that pesky coaster.
I can see what they tried to do. They tried to make it a bit like being in a Formula One car, and they just aligned it with the main straight. And they made it very fast. So you get in a roller coaster and you feel like you're in a Formula One car.
However, did say at some points it was going faster than the cars.
Great. Why there? Why not around the back of the circuit, out of the way? It really wasn't a sensible place to put one. And yes, it cost the German taxpayer an awful lot of money to make what is basically a very cheap roller coaster.
News and views.
There were rumours recently that some of the new teams that weren't selected for the 2010 championship were told that they had to have a Cosworth on board to get their application approved. That is not a good rumour.
No, this was that in the Times this came out? We're not too happy hearing about this at all, are we?
No. Well, there wasn't any proof, but then it's somewhat of a coincidence that the three new teams do have Cosworth as an engine.
Yeah, absolutely. Not good news.
Today, it was announced that N Technology, one of the unsuccessful teams for next year, they're taking the FIA to court over their selection process.
Good.
A spokesperson said, "We are doing this in the name of the sport. From our point of view, the procedure for dealing with new entrants was not respected and there was not transparency about the process and preparations for the 2010 championship."
I have to say, there's a little bit of naivety there on N Technology's front, because the last time this happened, there wasn't transparency. And I don't quite know what they were expecting. We were expecting exactly what has happened.
It wasn't a surprise when this came out, was it?
No, not at all. But I'm glad that somebody's standing up to them, and it's more mud to throw at Max.
Autosport say that FOTA have also asked for clarification on the selection process, but they don't really want to get involved. Martin Whitmarsh was keen to point out that they have no say in that process.
They don't have any say in any process.
Well, no, it seems as though they're not allowed to voice their opinion at all.
Don't go down that road. It makes me angry. I don't even want to talk about those kind of politics.
No, we're not going to go into the whole FOTA versus the FIA thing again, but there is good news all round because Ari Vatanen confirmed he would be standing. He will be standing against Max Mosley in October.
Love that guy. What a star.
Well, at first I was a bit worried that everyone just liked him because he wasn't Max, and I was thinking, what if he's no good either? But then I thought, anyone but Max is fine, really.
No, he is good. He really is good. Did you see the interview that the BBC did with him at the weekend?
Yes, he was very good. He said everything that he needed to say, what we needed to hear.
Yeah.
He was very clear about being an anti-Max, basically.
Yes, he did it in a very polite way. And I hope, well, I mean, he's clearly targeting the motor and organizations, and he's saying the right things to the right people, as you pointed out. And I hope that's going to be enough to get him the votes he needs to secure a chance to fight Max.
Yeah, because he essentially said F1 needs a change. The FIA need F1, and a breakaway would be absolutely terrible. And Max should stop being so freaking autocratic.
He didn't quite say that.
I paraphrase a bit.
I should say that it looks like he's got support from the AAA, who we know aren't big fans of the way Max has been going about his business. And I don't think it's a huge surprise that Ari decided to turn up at the Nürburgring, which is a sporting venue controlled by the ADAC. And they notably fell out with the FIA. Was it last year?
Yeah, they asked him to reconsider his position.
Yes.
When the scandal broke last year.
Things have been a little bit tetchy between the FIA and the ADAC. So Ari turning up, I mean, he's among friends by turning up. The Nürburgring is a great time to make an announcement, and it was perfect timing on his part.
It is good that it shows that he knows how to play the politics game.
Yes.
Just as well as anyone else.
He does. He has said he's going to have to go on a tour now, though, because obviously the way the voting system has been set up, you could say rigged.
Yeah.
The way that Max is set it all up so that each club has an equal vote, no matter how big they are or how small they are. There's a whole bunch of clubs in the Middle East, which essentially Ari's now going to go and have to campaign and try and earn their support.
He did mention that if Max doesn't stand, which seems very unlikely, then Jean Todt would. But if Max does, Jean Todt won't.
Right.
So, I mean, is there some kind of law that you're only allowed two?
No, it's because right now I think Jean Todt is out campaigning for Max's side. So essentially Jean is garnering support for the approach that Max has taken, and which we assume that if Max decides not to stand, Jean will take over. So they're essentially on the same team, and they're all playing for the same side.
So that is kind of like politics in real life, where you get multiple people but for the same party.
Absolutely. And this is why Ari is the perfect man for this, because he has experience in these fields. He knows exactly what's going on, but above all, he used to be a racing driver, and a damn good one too. And that's what the FIA really, really need. That's what they've been missing for since forever, essentially. And the guy, he's a great driver. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can come up with and whether or not he can get the backing that he so richly deserves.
So Ari gets our vote.
The race.
Now, during free practice, I don't have audio, but you said that you heard the F1 teams aren't going to be allowed in their factories over the summer break.
This is what Ian Phillips mentioned during Free Practice 2 on Radio 5 Live. He said he's going to go on holiday, not because he's lazy, not because he doesn't feel like working during the four-week break that's coming up in Formula 1. He said he's going on a holiday because he's been banned from entering the factory.
Is it just because they don't like him? That's what they're telling him.
That might be what they're telling him. But the way I read it was that this is the case for all Formula 1 teams, and nobody is allowed to work during the summer break. They're all going to be banned from entering the factory, I'm assuming.
This is a cost-cutting measure.
This must be a photo thing. I don't think this happened before. I mean, I know everybody goes on a break, but surely they keep working and working and working on the break to make the cars faster. They don't get locked out of their factories, do they?
Well, it was always the case that they'd, at the last race before the break, they'd be like, now we're going to work really hard and bring back lots of developments and win the championship. And then after the break, they never did.
No.
But this year, they're not even allowed to develop anything.
This year they're going to go and sit on a beach, as far as I can tell, because the factories will be locked, the air conditioning will be switched off, everything will be powered down, and nobody's going to be in.
So there's no testing.
Nope.
There's no factory working.
Nope.
Soon there won't be anything at all.
Well, that is exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be no news for 4 weeks. So good luck with that, GMM.
I think F1 Minute's going to have to take a bit of a break.
I think you might have to. I can see a lot of mini-series happening in those 4 weeks, because I don't know. This may, or maybe somebody can tell us in the comments that this isn't new. And maybe this happens every year, but as far as I'm aware, at least 2, if not 3 weeks will be spent outside of the factory by all Formula 1 personnel.
In the comments, Rachel said that Ian Phillips said Force India were and Toyota were, but he didn't say they all had to.
Interesting.
So it might not be regulation.
It could be a voluntary agreement. But at the moment, Force India aren't even in FOTA. They've not been allowed back in yet, as far as I'm aware. So if it's a FOTA thing, then it's good on Force India for sticking by their plans.
Also in free practice, well, throughout the whole weekend, really, we've seen a lot more of the different camera shots and angles. So we've seen some of the ghost images.
They brought the ghost cars back. Last seen in Bahrain, missing in action since then.
It freaks me out a little bit. I'm not sure I like the cars merging together. It looks weird.
They need a big flashing sign to say, by the way, these aren't crashing.
Yeah.
You need to keep that in mind. I love it. I wouldn't want it any other way. After seeing the car overlays. I think after I saw them in Bahrain, I wanted it every single time. Didn't you say earlier in the weekend you wanted to watch the whole race like that? Was that a different camera angle?
Yeah, well, no, we also had Thermocam, and we had some really... some of those close-up slow-motion things.
Oh, we've always had those in Germany. They love those.
Yeah, so I said I wanted to watch the whole race in thermo super slow-mo.
Right, that would be enjoyable. Yeah. Thermocam,
it took quite a while, I think.
Thermocam made a rather bizarre comeback because it wasn't a static camera. It was a moving camera. It was a roaming camera this time.
Yeah, and it flicked as well. So you were looking at the picture. One minute it was thermo,
yep,
and then they flicked a switch and it wasn't, and then they just carried on their way. It was a bit odd.
And they did that in qualifying, but it never returned. Did I miss it in the race? Did it not happen?
No, I didn't see any Thermocam in the race.
What on earth are they playing at? They take this really expensive piece of equipment, they tease us with it, and then they take it away again.
One thing I did notice with the super slow-mo is that the cars look really wibbly.
In slow motion?
Yeah.
I wonder if F1 teams use these cameras to see what's going on.
Because the front wing...
fantastic insight.
The front wing was bouncing all over the place and the tyres were wibbling in and out.
Toyota's front wing really did look like it was going to fall to pieces at any moment. It was almost like David Coulthard was in the car crashing.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing. You know, when the car just falls to pieces into a million... parts. That's what it was like when Glock was behind the wheel, but the car actually stayed together. It was designed for those tolerances.
If you were watching it at normal speed, it would just look normal, like it's not moving at all.
You couldn't possibly pick it up.
Crazy.
Great insight, though.
And the best thing, obviously, was Buemi when he did the super drift.
Oh, in the super slow-mo. Yeah, we might need to find some kind of clip of that, because that needs to be kept for posterity. Loved it. Did you enjoy qualifying this week?
It was amazing.
Blinding.
We already know that qualifying is the best part of a race weekend.
And with a bit of added rain, really mixed up the numbers, didn't it?
Yeah.
I enjoyed that so much. A couple of things I really wanted to point out, though. Alonso, he spun in qualifying, and then he spun again on the parade lap before the race.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I was quite disappointed because I keep a few statistics, and I've got teammate comparisons, and Alonso has always got the count in beating Piquet in qualifying and the race. Always. And then he lost out to Piquet in qualifying.
For the first time.
So my numbers are going to look rubbish.
Piquet's actually not doing too bad, is he? He did well at Silverstone, finished ahead of Alonso, and then he out-qualified his illustrious teammate. So you know, we may have... No, we haven't really.
We may have judged him too soon.
No, not at all. However, he did vanish during this Grand Prix. Piquet did. Did you notice Piquet?
I didn't notice Piquet at all. That's a good point.
Alonso made a bit of a comeback halfway through.
Yeah, we suddenly spotted him and went, oh yeah, there are Renaults in this race.
He's found some big yellow things going around. He's found some pace. He's out there and he's fighting. But Piquet was a bit anonymous. He didn't really get up to much apart from avoiding Alonso at one key moment.
They did. Alonso was coming out the pits, wasn't he?
Mm.
And they almost collided, which is quite amusing.
We have to give a massive, massive hat tip to the McLaren guys, who have been working tirelessly to get their car up to speed. And my goodness, they found some pace this weekend.
Yeah. Well, everyone keeps talking about, including me in the digest, the factory worker that did a 36-hour shift nonstop. And it suddenly just dawned on me how very, very illegal that is.
Yeah.
But it made the difference.
I can't imagine that happening under Ron's watch.
No, it certainly made the difference though, didn't it?
Absolutely. I don't recall such a significant update from any team. I mean, I know McLaren were a long way back and therefore they had a great distance to pull themselves forward. But Lewis really looked like he was enjoying driving that car, especially in free practice and qualifying. It looked like he was getting the absolute most out of it. And it was unfortunate that Heike didn't get the updates because they didn't have enough. I was slightly worried, actually, in qualifying that Lewis his bodywork looked like he might catch fire.
Really?
So
they did keep saying it was a work in progress.
The exhaust packaging was a bit tight and there was a lot of bubbling and burning near the exhaust exits. But luckily, it didn't actually adversely affect Lewis. However, that's such a great update. They really have pulled themselves right back into the development race with what they've done this weekend.
It all went very, very wrong for Lewis, though, didn't it? At one point, I was even feeling sorry for him.
Oh, an awesome, awesome start. He came from nowhere. Unbelievable. I mean, we knew Kurs was going to be pretty good off the line at this race. It was, I think we talked about it in the parade lap, it was a bit of a fingers crossed moment that if Kurs didn't really take off here, that would really, you know, that would spell the end of anything that it was capable of doing. But didn't Lewis fly? He had the perfect start and hauled himself right the way up to the front.
Yeah, and then I thought he ruined it because he ran wide, but it wasn't his fault.
No, he was...
Webber was bouncing off people all over the place.
Webber picked up some tips from Coulthard for this race, by the look of it, and decided to bash everybody out the way. The only difference was he kept his car in one piece. And unfortunately, halted Lewis's charge before it could get going.
The fact that Lewis was out the way allowed Hakey to shine as well, because he had pulled himself up to about third, I think.
Yep, and became something of a trolley train up the front.
Yeah, it wasn't so great that he was holding everyone up, and it was about a 20-second gap between him and the front couple. But still, he did a good job with what he had.
And Massa also. That curse really did make a difference to everybody who was running it. And Massa managed to jump a bunch of people to bring himself into contention too.
One rumour that surfaced recently is that this weekend would be Bourdais' last.
Refuses to go away, this one, but not confirmed.
No, he said that the team hadn't said anything to him, which they wouldn't really, would they? And then apparently Bourdais' wife let slip that this was his last weekend, but still he kept saying that he had a contract for next weekend and he would be there.
He didn't. His race didn't go very well.
It didn't go anywhere, really, did it?
And he finished his stint early, but the handshakes with the pit wall at the end really did look like goodbye, didn't it?
Yeah.
That didn't look like thanks for a really good race.
It was a proper hug.
Yeah, that was thanks for the last 18 months and
see you around.
I'm on my plane now. Goodbye. We're not expecting the guy to come back. He says he has a contract for Hungary, but he's not going to be there, is he?
No, because whoever it was, Holly probably on Five Live, asked him, will you be there at the next race? And he said, I have a contract, which is not an answer.
He didn't say what it was for.
No.
Though. He might be a truckie.
Yep.
That's what I'm thinking.
You said he might make the tea.
Well, that's a truckie.
So if he is gone, that means that the other guy might get the call up.
The other guy?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to name the other guy?
No, I'm going to call him not Seb.
See, there's been a lot of debate in the comments of how to pronounce the name, and some people say it's Jaime Al-Jaswari.
Yep.
Ted called him Jamie. So yes. Jamie is good enough for me.
You believe Ted?
I believe everything Ted says, and until he tells me different, it's Jamie.
Okay, I'm still sticking with not Seb.
Do we have any idea why Mr. Hartley was pushed out so abruptly in order to get this other guy in to replace Bourdais, and why Hartley wasn't up for the challenge of driving Bourdais' Toro Rosso slowly?
Well, the only thing I can think is that if they didn't want Brendan to have the opportunity and they wanted to promote Jaime above him.
Why make Brendan the test driver in the first place?
Well, maybe they didn't realise they were going to get rid of Bourdais, and then they suddenly realised how bad he is.
Right. Maybe they just didn't like the hair.
Earlier in the comments, I think Gavin asked whether anyone would be sad to see Bourdais go. And I kind of am. I mean, he's not my favourite anymore.
We did campaign for the return of Bourdais this year. We thought he deserved a second chance. And then three races in, we realised he didn't.
No. I mean, the thing is, my only defence for him is that the car is useless.
Yeah. And worse than useless this year, considering the package that New has given them. They really haven't managed to unlock any potential from it. And I think Toro Rosso must be in line for biggest disappointment of 2009.
Yeah, so I am sad to see him go, but you know, what are you going to do? Someone, it's good to see a mid-season shake-up, really, because
absolutely,
we haven't had that for a long time.
We didn't have that last year, and the guy did well at Le Mans, and maybe that's where his future lies.
Changing the subject completely then, because otherwise I'll get all sad.
Oh, you don't want to bring the podcast down.
No. Rosberg did really well today.
Goodness me, I did not expect this whatsoever. At the beginning of the year, when Williams were doing well, but failed to capitalise on their advantage, I really thought they'd blown it, and I did not think they could keep up the development race. But that Williams is keeping ahead of McLaren, and it's keeping ahead of Ferrari, and it's pulled Nico into fourth place on merit, without any safety car intrusions, without anybody particularly falling out of the way. The guy had pace, and the car had pace, and it all came together. Good man.
I think perhaps I didn't notice him that much, because I was more happy that Massa got on the podium. Felipe Baby on the podium.
It's good to see, actually. Is that the first Ferrari stroke McLaren guy on the podium this year? I think it might be.
I did notice that, I think Lou pointed out, it was the first podium of the year with no Braun drivers on there.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, I think it's, you know, in the development race, we saw the development race go to the end of the 2008 season, and both teams, Ferrari and McLaren, were fighting each other tooth and nail, and both lost out at the beginning of this year. So there was almost a mini race to see who would get there first. Despite McLaren making such an improvement, Ferrari just managed to nip it with Massa's third place there, which was well deserved. He did a good race, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Hamilton hadn't had the issue on the first corner, then that would never have happened. Massa wouldn't be up there. But
I think also we need a big hats off to Mr. Rob Smedley, something we rarely do around these parts.
Rob who now?
In qualifying, the team managed to completely mess up Massa's tyre selection, and
yes,
he had to call on Massa just to stop and say, look, they've messed up your tyres. He spotted it. He radioed the driver and said, look, they've screwed it up, and you've got to take it into your own hands and not go anywhere. So good call from Rob for doing that, because that saved Massa's qualifying.
Heikki did that as well, didn't he? Didn't he have to switch off his own engine?
Yeah, because he didn't agree with the tire choice, so he just turned off his car and just sat there, which was good to see. I like drivers and the guys on the pit wall making, you know, they're in that much control and be able to pull it back online when the team managed to try and screw it up for them.
So talking of Ferrari, which we were a few minutes ago, Kimi versus Sutil, the rematch.
Again. Go on, what's your take?
I don't know. I reckon it was probably just a racing incident. And I'm more annoyed that the steward said they were going to investigate it after the race.
That was peculiar.
When they'd already decided to hand out penalties during racing.
It wasn't like they were short of onboard camera footage or needed to speak to the drivers for any reason. It was an unusual decision, and you're right, the Webber decision was made very quickly, and it was the right decision. So why on earth they couldn't do the same for Ferrari and Force India, I have no idea. I would say that apart from it being a massive shame that the two guys managed to collide again, I would put Kimi slightly at fault for that one, because he had a better view of what was going on. And he should have known that a Force India on cold tyres with a heavy fuel load would have overshot the apex and slid into him. And he should have given him a little bit more room. And he chose not to. And unfortunately, that basically ended Sutil's chances. I don't actually know. Was Kimi's problem related to the accident, or was it just...
I'm not sure. He didn't really clarify. No. In the comments, Kathy and Scott have both said that there is no punishment for that. The stewards decided it was just a race incident.
Could they have not done that whilst they were racing, though? What did they achieve by waiting? I don't understand.
Another potentially controversial thing that happened during the race was Rubens. Well, actually, it was after the race, wasn't it? Because he had a bit of a rant about his team.
Yeah, we mentioned it at the beginning of the show. I love it. I love a guy who's just that annoyed that he says, to hell with everything, to hell with the consequences. I'm just going to say exactly what I think. Live on national, well, international television.
Yeah.
And my team can pick up the pieces afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I loved it. My jaw was on the floor and I like it when F1 does that to me.
Yes. Clearly it's been building for a long time. This isn't something that just, this wasn't a pressure cooker that exploded at this race. We know Rubens has been upset post-race. I think Lou and Lukey both alluded to it in the comments that neither was looking forward to what Rubens had to say after the race, but in the end, it turned out to be quite fantastic. I thought that Ross Brawn did a great job of deflating the situation.
Well, the thing in our comments, it turned into the whole Barrichello thinks Button is being favoured again, all that stuff.
That wasn't really his argument, though, was it?
Nonsense, because all he said was, I don't want to talk to the team. They're going to come up with some rubbish. I don't want to hear it because I've just been so unlucky. It's really unfair. I hate my life. I want to go home. That's basically what he said,
yeah.
Which has got nothing to do with Button being favoured. He even categorically stated that was not the issue.
No.
So Barrichello had a rant, which is very good to see, because it's nice to see drivers getting worked up about things.
Mm.
And then Ross Brawn came along and said, you know, he's understandably upset. We'll talk to him later. There's nothing we could have done. It just went wrong. All is well.
Yes.
And that was perfect.
You got the impression during the race that Rubens wanted to change strategy. In fact, before the parade lap, Rubens was talking on the radio about changing from plan A to plan B. He clearly didn't want to do a three-stopper race, perhaps because he suspected Jensen might do a two-stopper and jump him again, because that's happened in the past. And it sounded like Rubens throughout the race wanted to do two stops and change to a two stopper as soon as blooming possible. And that unfortunately couldn't happen. And I guess that was his main beef. You could tell that Jensen was slightly frustrated following Rubens, because he clearly thought he was faster. He was doing a lot of weaving.
I think he was faster.
Yeah.
Well, the times seemed to be. Though.
I mean, when he had the one lap to put it in, he put in a stellar lap.
Yeah.
Jensen pulled it out of the bag to jump Rubens in that way. But it just looked like that once he got in front of him, he didn't really pull away. So I'm not quite sure what was about. It wasn't a massive performance difference once Jensen got in front, which was a bit peculiar.
Yeah, because Barrichello was blaming the team, which is right, because the fuel rig failed, which is generally a team thing. He said he did everything he could. He got in front on the first corner.
Yep.
He was driving as fast as he could, and the team let him down, and they did.
We have criticised Rubens' starts this year, haven't we?
Yeah.
Was it the last race he just went backwards? And the pack swamped him. He made a great start. He really did.
Start of the year, I'd say.
I think so.
For him.
And he got into the first corner first, which was exactly what he needed to do. And then from that point onwards, it all unraveled. Ross Brawn was right that the Red Bull cars were faster. and there likely wasn't much Rubens could have done, but he should have been on the podium with the, you know, one way or another. And the team did let him down a little bit.
I'm not sure if we've mentioned it yet, but Webber did quite well this weekend.
What define quite well?
Well, he got pole position, fastest man out there by miles.
Yes.
And he also won the race, his first race ever.
If it wasn't for that pesky Alonso, he probably would have got fastest lap too. It all came together for Mark Webber. Even a drive-through penalty couldn't stop him.
That is amazing. I don't maiden win. Remember the last time a driver got a penalty and then...
Probably Michael Schumacher. Sounds the, like the kind of thing he would have done. The guy was great on Saturday when, in changeable conditions, he made all the right calls. He, like you said, he had a great load of fuel on board. He put in a really good lap. And he got pole for the first time in his career. And then he followed it up today with an almighty drive.
Yes. And actually, the interesting thing is, I think we mentioned this in the parade lap today, that when Vettel was on pole earlier, a couple of races ago, he made a mistake on the first lap and couldn't regain the place.
That's true.
And this time, Webber also made a mistake on the first lap of a different kind, but garnered him a penalty. And he did recover and he managed to get the win. So that's, I don't know what...
Damn good point. Because Webber went into the first corner in second place, but didn't get rattled. Even when he got the penalty from the FIA, he still kept his cool. He still outdrove everybody else on the track, which Vettel couldn't do when he was rattled by Button. So that's an interesting point. I hadn't occurred to me that one. What a man! What a star! What a drive! Loved it, really.
Well, that pretty much sums up. The only thing I would say is that on Saturday I was disappointed in the excitement of his pole position, because on the radio we heard him say, "Did we get it?" And then they said, "Yes, you're on pole." Yeah. And he went, "Woohoo!" But I think he really, really made up for it after the race, because that was screaming for a good 2 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And I think I'm amazed he had a voice for the press conference afterwards.
My kind of celebration. Well deserved. And let's have
he
more
He did
of
jump
that.
Off the car, yeah. Which possibly didn't go down so well on his leg.
He got caught up in the moment. Really good to see. We've supported him for the last several races. It's been a long time coming, and let's hope he gets more of them. Has it brought him back into the title challenge? Is he in with a shot of the title this year?
Well, he's certainly closed up to Vettel again, although Vettel was on the podium with him. So
what is there, 2 points between them?
Yeah. And they are catching up to Button, I think.
Good. That's what we want. We want a championship to be on.
Yes, absolutely.
We thank Red Bull for making the strides they have, and for Webber and Vettel for driving how they have done.
It's really closed up the constructors as well.
If only we weren't having a 4 week break.
Fantasy Racers.
In fifth place, Rhino F1 team with 7061. Fourth is Brontastic with 7347. Third, Demigods of Aeon, 7574. Second, Celtic Racing with 7682. And first, Couch Potato with 8346. You know the last debrief we did, which was a couple of weeks ago? You probably don't remember it.
That seems like far too long ago to recall.
We did a sort of half-term Fantasy Racers wrap-up.
Yeah, I do.
We asked for the people in the comments to give their teams a shout-out and we'd collect them all together. Well, that worked really well, so I've done it again.
Yep.
And actually, we've started using Twitter-esque hashtags in the comments.
Oh, yes, and they're working quite well. People got a little bit carried away, I think, this week. I've got pages and pages of people's thoughts. You seem to have printed out for me.
Yes, well, we'll run through them very quickly. So my team, Sidepodcast Races, is currently 85th, and Lou says, Honda's Helping Hand would like to express their joy at seeing that they are now 53rd and still ahead of Sidepodcast Races. I really don't like being the benchmark for everyone. It's so unfair. Because Jernia, he carries on and says, Scuderia Mil Milia is very pleased to have achieved a key goal today by cracking the top 100 for the first time this season.
Go, Jernia.
Thanks to a strong showing by Webber and Vettel and a solid run by Button and Barrichello, the team scored healthy points today and is now in 97th. That said, it is disappointed to have been outscored by Sidepodcast Races today. With Sidepodcast Races in 85th, SMM management believe they are definitely within reach. The entire team is confident that they will be ahead of Sidepodcast Races by season's end.
Goodness me, they're all fighting
you. So mean. RG's team chucking the rule book out. He says, happy, happy, happy. My best finish ever in an entire race, 514th.
Incredible.
Great result, solid 682 points. So that is quite a lot of points.
That is a huge point haul. Well done, RG. That's not the top of everybody by any chance, is it? Because that seems like a great point haul.
No, I think the top would be someone called Kathy.
Oh, not again.
Yeah.
You are joking.
It's quite a lot of points.
Oh my goodness.
Lukey says, sad times for Formula Muse tonight, dropping down to 93rd. Sadly, the team had issues with bad radio signal when listening to Five Live and a glitch with opening a bottle of Coke during the race to fill up our driver's points tally. Alas, we can only hope for improvements, but the team know we weren't good enough today.
Fair enough.
Amy, she says, who cares about my teams? What matters is that Hakey got 100 points all by himself.
Aww.
The first time he's hit three figures since China.
That's going to help his little graph thing that Gavin does.
Yes.
That'll push him up a little bit.
Rachel joined very recently and she says, after their second competitive race, Empty Stands finds itself top of a small subgroup of competitors and is very happy with this result.
That's awesome. Can I also shout out for the, I think it was 8 people who joined Fantasy Races this week for this race.
Excellent.
It's still new people coming along and that's brilliant to see. So I think Rachel's in amongst that group of that group of people that have just come along. So we'll keep an eye on those. And if you haven't already joined, it's still not too late.
I think recently Alison in the comments asked why you would join when you're clearly not going to win. But none of us are going to win now that Kathy is so far ahead. So what you do is you form your own little battles,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, you pick your battles wisely, and it looks like most people have picked you.
Yeah. Gavin says, had a hunch to sell Sutil, Kubica and Glock for Weber. Should have listened to my gut, but then those three drivers only scored 20 points less than Weber.
Goodness me.
But presumably, if you had Weber, you could have afforded other people as well.
Don't know. You've asked me a complicated question there.
Okay. Stephen says, today's poor performance is entirely the fault of Mark Weber. Having not lived up to expectations, he was fired, and then to spite the management, he won the race. That would be bad enough, but in the major reshuffle surrounding his departure from the team, we signed Lewis Hamilton, whose race Weber destroyed at the first corner.
Fortunately,
Lewis was dissuaded from parking his car early, so we picked up a few points.
Okay.
That really is all Weber's fault, isn't it?
It really is. Unbelievable.
Just a couple more. Nick's team Gravity Racing, he says, we have stormed up to 553rd in fantasy races out of a grid of 561 teams. I would say things can only get better, but they can clearly get 8 places worse.
Oops.
I think they'll probably get better though.
With more teams joining, they could get even drop even further.
That's true. And Alien Nora says, Lacanto Magnifico Aleman was my best team, 589 points. The Germans thrived at their home circuit with Rosberg and Vettel breaking the three-figure mark and the other three Germans lending good support.
What about me?
You are currently 334th, which means you've gone down because you were 308th after the last race.
I tried so hard as well. I had a strategy and a plan.
Yeah, you put some real thought into it.
I'm chasing Ollie. Clearly. Clearly, I'm not chasing him very hard.
I just wanted to quickly give a shout out to Rick, who sent me an email about Fantasy Races. He says, hi, Christine. Please let everyone know that my team name is meant to be very, very, very tongue-in-cheek. Scott Speed was horrible in F1, and he is horrible in NASCAR.
What was his team name?
That is Bring Back Scott Speed, you see.
I think
we might have mentioned this before.
I might have been offended by the idea of bringing back Scott Speed.
Yeah, we said we had to beat him. So right. He carries on, I hate to tell you, but I haven't touched my team since the first race. And now that you have called me out to the world, I have made the necessary changes to easily overtake you. On another note, in case Peter Windsor and Ken Anderson are listening, my vote for US F1 drivers in 2010 would be Alexander Rossi and anyone not named Danica Patrick.
Awesome.
Take care, Rick from America.
Good stuff. Very quickly, we've got loads, obviously, Fantasy Racers feedback there, but just a couple of other things I really wanted to squeeze in. If you're interested in making your Fantasy Racers teams improve, if you're looking for tips and hints and stuff, we're going to put a load of links in the show notes because we haven't really got time to mention them. But Gavin's done his stats page again. Scott's been working on a post about, I think, the best performing, the best average drivers. And also, Alianora has her comparator, which will tell you in advance of the race weekend who's going to be doing well. So if you take a look at that on a Friday, which I think is the cutoff point. Is it Friday 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock on a Friday evening?
Yes.
If you check it out, Alia's comparator, she normally puts in Dropio before you make your Fantasy Races changes, then that may help you out and it may help bring you up and tackle Christine, because clearly I'm too far down for anyone to care. And whilst on the subject of Fantasy Races, one quick plug to squeeze in. Kathy is obviously doing quite well, and every time you do well and score a whole handful of points, you get a prize. You get a Fantasy Races award, I think a t-shirt.
Is it if you score the most points in a weekend?
Last year, was it Jordan managed that and he sent you his t-shirt and you were wearing it in one of the live shows,
yes,
if I recall.
That's true.
And Kathy has kindly donated one of her winning shirts to Pit Lane Fanatic. They do a quiz every Wednesday. And the prize this Wednesday, if you're around, will be Kathy's t-shirt, which sounds like an awesome thing to win.
Will Kathy have signed it?
I'm hoping that Kathy has signed it. You don't get to win Kathy, you just get to win the t-shirt that Kathy used to own. And if you're interested in winning that, it's a Formula One quiz, obviously, and you can join in pitlanefanatic.com.
I had an email from Ern this week. I think we've mentioned him before.
We have. I remember it well.
And he just quickly pointed out the fact that he'd spotted Peter Windsor has been replaced by James Allen in the press conference.
Had kind of spotted that one.
Yeah.
Not too pleased about it.
I just wanted to bring it up because it was sort of an issue this week in that we really didn't want to watch the press conference.
No. I'll just read them. It's absolutely fine. His voice... It
just brings back bad memories. That's all it does.
I want him to go away. I'd never, ever, ever expected him to be on the BBC, and yet somewhere he's found a way to sneak in. And so, no, the press conferences from here on in will be via text only. But thank you, and I hope you will join us in the boycott of James Allen in the press conference.
Another email I had this week says, "Hello, Christine and Mr. C. I've been listening to your podcast for about 2 years now, and I never miss an episode. I am the one who added McLaren into my son's middle name, entered into your 'You Know You're an F1 Fan When' game.
I've just heard
that Bassano will be in Montreal July the 10th. Well, I don't live in Montreal. I'm in the Halifax, Nova Scotia area. I just would like to put out there that if he or any other side podcast listener is in the area at any time, it would be great to get together for a pint.
Oh, my
Cheers
goodness.
For now, DJ Hanninen."
Ah, DJ Hanninen. What a great name.
Yes.
Do you think he's a real DJ?
I don't know.
I'm liking DJ.
If he is, we need some tips.
Appreciating that shout out. And if anyone is in the Halifax, Nova Scotia area, for goodness sake, please do meet up because I'm loving the international meetup.
It's very good, isn't it?
And Bassano is in, he's in Montreal now as we speak. So if you are around and you've got the shout out late, it's not too late to meet him. I believe he found a marmot as well for you this week.
He
took a picture
did.
Of it and dropped it for
Aww.
You. How sweet is
I
that?
I do like the marmot. My next email is from Jared, who says, "I've peripherally followed F1 for a few years. My first exposure was the start of the 98 Belgian race with the huge pileup, followed by attending the 2000 Suzuka race, and I'm getting into more this year due to my new interest in sim racing, iRacing and Forza on the Xbox. It's kind of a sucky season to try to get started in due to the lack of competition and the politics this year, but what can you do?
You've just got better.
I discovered your podcast and love the 1 minute a day updates as well as the longer shows. The safety series was very enjoyable and I appreciate the work you all put in. Just want to say thanks, Jared in Japan."
Oh, Jared, too kind. I think I've already complimented you on your safety series, didn't I?
Yeah,
but if I haven't already, I'd just say that it is great. I really enjoyed it.
Omnibus is available now.
And yeah, I would actually, if anybody's listening and managed to catch the Omnibus and has listened to previous Omnibuses in the past, you did something different this time out.
Well, I did tweak it a bit because previously the Omnibus has been a little bit of extra work. And so all I've done is put in all the shows one after the other.
Yes.
So it doesn't really give you any benefit at all.
No.
Whereas this time what I did was take out the endings of each show and blend the music better so it should flow.
You put a bit more effort into them.
Yes.
And I'm just curious, did anybody notice? Is it an improvement? Does anybody care?
Moving on, my final email is from Chris. He says, "Christine, I'm not sure that you guys have discussed this, but since it's silly season and now that it looks like there really will be a US team, who would you like to see driving? Who do you think you will see driving? There is some speculation here, not much because of the NASCAR shadow that open wheel racing falls into. I know that Marco Andretti has driven an F1 car, as have a handful of others, but are they really good enough? Some people are also talking Danica, but she's not a dominant Indy driver and that won't bode well for a transition to F1. There's one driver I would like to see, but he's too successful with NASCAR and all the related racing to make the jump. His name, you ask? Kyle Busch. He's hated by a large number of NASCAR fans because he's arrogant and successful. They can't stand that whatever he races, he finishes at the top. Currently, he's running a NASCAR Sprint Cup car, a nationwide series car, think GP2, and a Camping World Series truck. Yes, a truck. He's been wildly successful in all of these forms of racing. Anyway, I'll be lurking via my iPod and your podcast. Regards, Chris DeRockman."
Cheers, Chris. I'm not sure. The name rings a bell, but didn't or wasn't there speculation that Kyle would get a Toyota test drive in an F1 car? I don't know. It was certainly a NASCAR driver, and the name there are two Bushes, I think, in NASCAR, and it may be the other Bush. But I think there was some talk of one of them having a Formula One test drive. I'm not entirely sure what happened to it. I'm pretty sure it didn't happen. But that would have been good to see. In terms of Danica, there was talk at the weekend that US F1 don't think they are going to be good enough for Danica.
Oh, really?
Which was a bit of a surprise. Peter Windsor was saying that he couldn't build a car competitive enough at the beginning to make Danica make the jump across, and it would be a few years before they were ready for her. Now, that's the first time I've heard that take, whether or not anybody thinks she's...
He might just be being polite.
Well, that's over polite, I think. Yeah, that's unnecessarily that's polite. But nice of him all the same. So I don't think we will see Danica over this way anytime soon, sadly. I would like to see her. We did tune into IRL at the weekend at some point. I think it was Pat pointing out a live feed, and she was talking, and she seemed relatively sensible. Now, I'm sure that's going to offend a lot of Americans, but she seemed okay to me.
It's such a dodgy line because you don't want to offend Americans, you don't want to offend females.
Well, you know, I don't know how she's received over there. I get the impression that from the comments on Soapodcast that not too many people like her, but I haven't seen anything to make me dislike her, and I wouldn't object if she made it to Formula One in any way.
I think generally speaking, we're always open to people having a go, and then we'll judge them on what they do once they get here.
And take the mickey when they fail.
Just like Bourdais.
And laugh when they collapse. Is that all you've got for emails?
Well, actually, we do have a voicemail that we received last weekend, the Goodwood weekend.
We asked for a couple.
Yeah.
Okay, who have we got first?
This is Lukey.
Hi, guys. Lukey here. Phoning in on the first evening of our podcast. I'm phoning first evening of Goodwood, even. I'm just looking out now, and it's only been the first thing. I'm absolutely blown away. I hope you can hear me all right, because the signal has been pretty atrocious all day. But wow, it's only been one day, and I'm just stunned. I guess I'm genuinely speechless for one of the first times in my life. But yeah, we're just coming out now, and I've just met Brian and Sam. I got a photo. Just watching it on the track as well. Just looking, just the sound of those cars. Just that beautiful, beautiful roar. Every time a car just races, I'm overwhelmed. So I'm going to leave you now before I begin to sound a bit weird, even more weird. So speak to you soon, guys. Hope you're enjoying your weekend, because I'm just one day into mine, and I think it's absolutely incredible. Bye.
I love that one, but he sent us another one. That was his first day at Goodwood, so thank you for that, Lukey. But then we've got another one. Shall we take a listen?
Hi, it's my podcast. It's Lukey here in Goodwood. And I just phoned in quickly because we're standing with Chris, stand by Chris, and he's just punched John Button.
I punched him.
I let John, no, I won't let John explain it. I'll let Chris explain it to you.
Right, I'll explain. Lou wanted a photo with John, but John Button walked off before Lou could get jumped. So I put him on the shoulder and said, can you have a photo with my friend, please? That's how he went. Here you go.
He punched him in the back. But yeah, we just thought to share the story that Lou has now spent some time with John Button and is still squealing in the background. So I'll see you soon, hopefully when Lou stops squealing. Bye.
I think I could actually hear Lou squealing in the background.
Oh,
there.
That is so
cool.
Awesome. So what happened was Lukey, Lou and Chris.
Vampire Chris.
Chris Vampire, we met at the Science Museum. They all managed to meet up. They had a little mini side pod meetup.
Yeah.
At Goodwood Festival of Speed. And then Lukey punched.
No.
Then Chris punched, or poked, depending on whose side of the story you believe, John Bunn for a picture.
That is amazing. And there is evidence on Dropio of a picture with Lou and John Button.
Yeah, and there's been lots and lots of blog posts and pictures and all sorts of excitement from everybody who went to Goodwood. And hopefully we're going to do a wrap-up post to collect everybody's thoughts and pictures together at some point this week. So do look out for that on the blog, and we'll try and collate everybody's thoughts, because we didn't get a chance to go. But it looked like the people who did had an absolutely fantastic time.
Housekeeping. One thing we haven't discussed this week is our Shell V-Power experiment.
Mm.
And do you know why we haven't discussed it?
It's going very badly.
It's going really badly.
How badly is it going?
Well, I don't know about you, but I went to the garage and they didn't have Shell V-Power because the one near me doesn't do diesel.
No.
So I went to the one that is a bit further away and in completely the opposite direction to which way I wanted to go. And it was so busy, I got in the wrong queue and I would have had to have V-Power petrol, which would have ruined my car.
Not good.
So I couldn't get the diesel, and I had to fill up with normal diesel, which means I haven't had the experiment started at all.
2 weeks into it, you've achieved absolutely nothing. You're still at square one.
The only thing I have is Shell diesel rather than supermarket diesel.
And have you noticed any difference?
No.
Okay. I've not been doing much better. I shouldn't laugh. My plan was to go for BP Ultimate diesel, and I went to the BP garage and the one that sells it was shut. I had a bit of a problem because I was running very, very low. By the time I got to the BP station, I was already in the on the orange warning light that I was running out of fuel. I managed to Google from the car the nearest V-Power station, and I managed to get there, which was quite an achievement. I got to the V-Power diesel petrol station with I'd used 35 miles worth of emergency fuel, or the extra fuel that's beyond the orange light.
Yeah.
I managed to get in the right queue, unlike you, and I managed to get V-Power diesel. And I got to be honest with you, it didn't make a hell of a lot of difference.
No.
I was slightly uninspired by it. The only differences thus far I managed to find is that if you're in the wrong gear going up a hill, you know when you're too lazy to change down, if you're going up a really steep incline and you're in fifth, you need to go to fourth. I do that quite often, and I found that with V-Power, I didn't have to. I could just stick in fifth and it would keep going. However, didn't have a massive performance boost from it.
So essentially you've actually done the experiment that I was supposed to be doing, which was to go from a regular fuel to the ultimate fuel, but we haven't managed to do the bit where you went from BP to Shell.
I've done that too, actually. In the last 2 weeks I've managed to put in I think £120 worth of fuel into my tank.
Wow.
Such is the mileage that I managed to do. In that I think I've paid something like £11.50 extra because of the additional you pay for the expensive fuel, the expensive diesel over the normal diesel. What I did find is that when I put in V-Power, not an awful lot of difference occurred, like I said, but when I put in BP Ultimate, the car basically drove itself out of the forecourt.
Right.
It felt like I was hanging on to the car.
You had V-Power and you went back to BP Ultimate.
Yeah, I went V-Power first, and then I managed to get BP Ultimate, I think, on Friday.
Right.
So I used up all my V-Power, and then I filled the tank up. Bizarrely, another coincidence, I basically, in order to get to the BP station, I was running on empty for exactly 35 miles.
Again.
before I got to the station. So both times, it's been a reasonably controlled experiment, because I've gone from literally nothing in the tank, and there really was nothing left, to a full tank of fuel. Then I got down to absolutely nothing. And I've gone for another full tank of fuel again. But there is a noticeable difference in BP Ultimate. And I didn't get that from V-Power. So
you found a difference between V-Power and between BP.
Yeah, I don't know. There was something that I think Stuart said to us. Not Stuart. David said to us in the paddock that it takes a couple of runs through the engine to clear out the old stuff.
Right.
So I'm not sure if possible.
So what you need to do is go back to V-Power again.
This experiment is going to run and run for weeks and
I haven't started mine yet. So
it's going to go on all summer long because...
we're useless.
It's just really hard to fill up your tank worth of fuel and then use that fuel. And then, do you know what I mean? It's going to take a while. But I can say that thus far, BP Ultimate is much better. And also, here's one other thing for BP. Now, the first station obviously I went to was shut, which is why I ended up with V-Power, so that's minus points for BP. However, when you go to a BP station, they have committed all of their diesel pumps to BP Ultimate, whereas in the Shell station, you just
it's
have
just
one pump that's sort of in the corner and they don't really want to talk about it.
Because I didn't notice it and I got in the wrong lane and there was so much traffic, I couldn't get across to it.
And we did a blog post about this. In the comments, people were suggesting we should do some kind of double blind test whereby I put in the fuel and I don't tell you what I've put in the car, which seems reasonable. The problem with that is with Shell, you have to go to the V-Power pump and you'll know what I'm putting in or whatever. So you can only do that with BP. So all in all, it's just a bit of a mess. We're going to do more blog posts and we're going to keep this going. We're not giving up. I'm really enjoying it, actually.
It's a great experiment.
I'm learning.
Stephen Roy said, so the Shell people have converted you to using BP.
Yep.
And so far,
absolutely.
That's an intermediate conclusion, I would say.
No, I think, I don't know whether it's mortality to my car or whatever, but there was, I expected to get a full tank of V-Power and fly out of the petrol station and nothing at all happened. And I thought, well, it'll take a while to come through the engine. And I ran out of fuel, basically, and it really didn't make the slightest bit of difference. Like I said, other than when you're in if you're in the wrong gear, V-Power will save you. If you're lazy and you can't be bothered to change down. BP Ultimate, the car flew. I felt like I was riding a bucking Bronco. The car was it just wanted to go, and there was a significant difference. And I'm almost looking forward to getting back in the car again with my BP Ultimate.
Well, that's it for this episode. Failed experiments out the way.
Enjoyable experiments, though.
Yes, absolutely. We're having a great time, not getting very far.
Very fast.
What are we going to do next week?
I have absolutely no idea, but there's much talk in the comments for SidePod Radio, where people wish to take over SidePodcast with their own selection of podcasts and radio shows. So maybe next weekend will be a weekend of radio experiments. Watch this space.